Forager Health Podcast, clearing the path to true vitality. I invite you to rise with us. Let us sow the seeds of compassion in our relationships, with ourselves, with each other, and with the land. Let us take our creation, our lived experience, beyond where it's been before. Let us ask ourselves what would happen if we were to open our hearts even more. And may we be guided toward our overall highest outcomes by joining together on this day. Hello and welcome to another episode of Forager Health Podcast. Today is part two of revisiting Bruce Lee's philosophy. In part one, I dove into a lot of context for why Bruce and his writings and teachings, as he shared them and as his daughter now shares them long after his passing, and dove into a little bit of his actual personal history, how he lived, how he died, the impact that he left on an international level, and then got into a few separate philosophical concepts that have struck me as the most impactful takeaways, or some of the most impactful takeaways that I've learned from him and his daughter over the years. And today we are continuing with that trend by discussing yet more concepts that I learned about Bruce, mostly through the Bruce Lee podcast, which has been running, I believe, since 2016, and now pops in to do a short season every once in a while with more interviews and insights. And it's just a really powerful and fun way to connect with a man that is literally 49 years after he died, still extremely influential, even in mainstream media and output of other people's creative expressions. So if you have not gone and listened to part one, this is your chance, because right now what we're about to do is dive straight into more philosophy from the Bruce Lee family company and productions, as well as more stories and concepts that are rather well known from Bruce's own productions while he was still alive. Before that, of course, don't forget to reach out if you're enjoying the content, share with a friend if you feel like this information and the show in general would bring them joy, would bring them happiness, would allow them more space to breathe and be themselves in their own lives. I would say that sharing the show with people that you know is one of the best ways to support us in our work and show us that our work is valued and gives me inspiration personally to continue. Secondly, of course, as I'm sure you've heard before, you could always go rate us and leave a review on iTunes or give us a rating on Spotify. That helps us fight the algorithm and try to climb up higher in the ranks and get in front of more people. That would mean the world to me. So, having said that, today we are going to start by diving into the art of dying. Now, even though that Bruce was only internationally famous as like a worldwide superstar shortly after his death with the release of Enter the Dragon in the US, where he finally broke through the cinematic barrier between Asian cultures and Westernized cultures, it is important to note that in the mid-60s, he was on American television quite a bit, first as Kato, who was Green Hornet's sidekick, which I believe I might have mentioned in the last episode, but also in a couple of shorter appearances. There's really famous recordings of interviews that he did on mainstream media. There's also instances where he guest starred for short periods of time on other shows, and one of those shows was Longstreet, where he did a couple of episodes. And that clip of him speaking of the art of dying is incredibly famous. There's also an episode on Bruce Lee podcast specifically addressing this topic. And he is helping in the scene a blind detective train to fight who's preparing for, I believe, some sort of professional match, from my understanding, or my memory for that matter. And he's not ready, right? And he's really, really distraught that he's not ready. And Bruce says, and I quote, "Like everyone else, you want to learn the way to win, but never to learn the way to lose. To accept defeat, to learn to die, is to be liberated from it. Once you accept this, you are free to flow and to harmonize. Fluidity is the way to an empty mind. You must free your ambitious mind and learn the art of dying." So this art of dying, I've applied this in so many areas of my life over the years. It's when to act and when to go within. It's when to speak and when to remain silent, to me at least. It is really a constant mindfulness practice where it expresses the fact that we can always return to neutral. Bruce talks constantly, endlessly about this idea of rigidity, how you can't have creativity with ego rigidity. And so he was constantly practicing this concept of dying because I think to him it meant returning to that neutral place. And it's really crazy. I know that I mentioned in the last one that he had all sorts of trinkets and exercise machines and whatnot made for him custom by his friends and acquaintances. He had a tombstone that was miniaturized, you know, with an inscription that stated on it in his office, "In memory of a once fluid mind crammed and distorted by the classical mess." And so this physical reminder was like, never stop and never get caught in pattern. Being rigid limits your growth. And we talk a lot about how we need to flow with emotions and be fluid and be adaptable. But even the pattern of adaptation is a pattern in and of itself. And so he was trying to constantly break to new levels of flow, which is also strongly reflected in his most famous philosophical concept, which is be like water. He also says, "To understand and live now, there must be a dying to everything yesterday. Die continually to every newly gained experience and be in a state of choiceless awareness of what is." So the art of dying in this context where he was training this detective to go into battle, it was also about the focus on the lesson from losing over the mourning of outcomes. Because when you're mourning an outcome, you're in the past, and when you're expecting something other than what might occur, then you aren't present either. So the outcome that you had imagined is only through your conditioned expectation. And it is through these conditioned expectations that we become rigid in our mind for assuming that no matter what, we are aiming for this expectation of outcome that might not be, one, the thing that happens, and two, the best thing for us. So that's the art of dying. I love that concept, and it's really a powerful statement. It really has a lot also to do with samatvam, the equal value of all experience that I talk a lot about on the show. Samatvam is the equal value of all life, and by way of equal value of all life, the equal value of all experience. The experience of an ant is the same value as yourself in that concept from ancient yogic traditions, because without the experience of the ant, wholeness in its reality wouldn't be complete, and reality can't exist without a completion, without wholeness. There is no partial reality. There is only the collective. And so regardless of the impact of that ant versus the impact of you and I, it's crucial that we both exist. And likewise with success or failure being two objective, or rather subjective, concepts, and it is only the objective overall outcome of what is that ends up actually being of value, and not our extra energy that we throw into the wants or the buts and the what ifs of trying to determine such an outcome. So learning the way to die is being fluid with the creation of an experience through action, and by accepting whatever experience is created, we are liberated from anything but the true essence of ourselves. And that is obviously a lifelong practice, but it's also a really powerful reminder of what's truly important as far as striving for something or simply acting in the moment with what's immediately apparent to us and utilizing what we have at our disposals and not wishing that there was something other than what we have in the moment. So moving on from the art of dying, we also have the six diseases. The six diseases were a series of concepts and writings that Bruce developed in order to fully express these sideways tangents of the mind and the ego that come into our progression as self, in self-mastery, in completion of ourselves as a human being, in order to cripple our chances of being someone of authenticity, like of being truly ourselves and actually being able to see what that person looks like as opposed to what the world sees us as. So the root cause of all six diseases, according to Bruce, is outside validation, like seeking acceptance by the pressure of imposed expectation from other people, from society, from your community. And they are the desire for victory, the desire to resort to technical cunning, the desire to display all that has been learned, the desire to awe the enemy, the desire to play the passive role, and the desire to get rid of whatever disease one is affected by. And breaking these down one by one, I believe the desire for victory is pretty straightforward. If you constantly fight for victory, then what else in your life is falling away? What are you sacrificing? At what cost does this victory in your mind's eye come at? So when you are striving for victory over all else, then you might be acting from a place of lacking, because where else would you fight so hard other than from a concept or a self perceived notion that you are trying to attain something that you don't already have. So if we feel as though we are not already victorious and there is desperation tied to that desire, then it can really, really cripple the nature of our relationships and how we relate not only to others but to ourselves. And your order of priority for what's really important in life can fall by the wayside. And I guess it's a good time to interject that I didn't, just like last episode, I didn't go back and listen to the podcasts that over the years has discussed these concepts in order to come at it from a fresh perspective that is my own as much as it can be. I reviewed their blogs a little bit just to have the proper wording and everything, and all of the awesome Bruce quotes are over on brucelee.com. But other than that, I am introducing these concepts and then breaking them down and also really, really shortening it up in order to fit as much in as possible. Because what you have to understand is that every little tiny thing that we're talking about today, there's like a whole separate hour and a half long discussion about each of these that I'm going through several in a single hour and a half to 2 hour kind of whirlwind. And so these are introductions and then a breakdown that comes from my center, my truth, my heart, and my mind as far as what they mean to me in this moment. And if you are intrigued, it's a good time then to go back into their content and take a much deeper dive from the source itself. And all of that stuff is going to be in the show notes. So having said that, that's the desire for victory. And the second one would be the desire to resort to technical cunning. This has to do with taking shortcuts. This always has to do with the scheming and maybe even a little bit of kicking and screaming and crying about, oh, how do I get around this? How do I get around that? Like, what's a get-rich-quick scheme? What's a better way to do this, a faster way to do this? How do I cram more into my days in order to try to shake the box enough for things to happen quicker? It's all about force, though, right? It's all about, like, how do I possibly move this way or that in my life other than the most direct or honest or obvious way? If you were a humble man in full presence, then you would just be like, oh, this route is, it's kind of like Occam's razor, like the most obvious choice, right? That's what I have to pick. Like, there's no other immediately apparent way that's easy. And if there's no immediately apparent way that's an easy choice as far as how to get done whatever you are trying to get done, then there's most likely other options that are much more complicated and could be seen otherwise as routes of escape from the most obvious choice. So it's also maybe a way of trying to impress others by imposing a show beyond what force is necessary. And a lot of these concepts, obviously, Bruce being a martial artist, apply a lot to martial arts and to life at the same time. There's a lot of technical cunning in fight technique as well. But on the other hand, what is the most powerful technique but the simplest and most direct? And that was Bruce's concept behind his technique that he developed of Jeet Kune Do. So, you know, getting rid of that classical mess once again and just doing the thing that needs done for you to be a responsible, clear-headed human being in full presence. Thirdly is the desire to display all that has been learned. And that is really just a childish sort of oppression of your true self and oppression on others by way of egotism. So it's really just getting back to the bare bones of general sound-minded adult nonviolent communication skills and asking yourself, well, is what you are sharing or displaying necessary? One of my favorite, I mean, there are many, but one of my favorite learnings from Anahata Ananda, who's one of my mentors in shamanic healing and breathwork, is the acronym of think before you speak. Is it true? Is it helpful? Is it inspiring? Is it necessary? And is it kind? And displaying everything that you know that pertains to whatever you're addressing in the moment for other people is not only not thoughtful, it is really overbearing, maybe even narcissistic, and it shows that you are holding a lot of pain. It doesn't actually show you as a wise man. It shows you as somebody who's holding on to a lot of suffering. And whether or not that is your fault, well, it's obviously not. It's all transgenerational. It's all cross-cultural. It's all, our core wounds and our accumulated trauma over generations of subjugation against the natural human way of being with each other, that is a job for us to resolve and let go of and integrate the lessons from, but it's nobody's fault. On the other hand, you're not going to look like an authority in the room. You're going to look like a jackass by doing that. So the desire display, all that has been learned, is pretty obvious as not something that is great, but it's also something that haunts a great many of us. And the six diseases are not some list of things, according to Bruce, that you need to cast out permanently. It's something that these separate desires are always there. Like, they're never going to go away. They're going to fade, and you're going to be able to interact with them in healthier ways and choose the nature by which you display yourself in the world. But the yearnings in the material world to display these behaviors, they are really quite human. And it's our relationship to our desires that can grow and mature into something that is more effective. So next is the desire to awe the enemy. The desire to awe the enemy is when you want others to see you as something other than what you are and something other than what they are. So this is, again, a desire to stand out. It's a desire to stand out in a way beyond your identification as yourself. It stems, once again, from the wounds we carry, not from integrity. And it is okay to naturally stand out because as you move along your path of psycho-spiritual evolution in discovering who you are and self-actualization, you will, once you've healed enough and you've been remembering what's really important as far as how you display yourself in the world for long enough, you are naturally going to stand out. That is just the bottom line. Most people are not going to be doing the work you're doing. Chances are, if you're listening to this show, you already, it's a good chance that you stand out in a crowd as it is. But going out of your way, that's like another thing entirely. It'll really happen of its own accord. And even then, it's important to be humble. Once again, if you're going to interject any kind of energy or impose your energy on another, is it necessary? And that necessary component is something that's really been very, very powerful for me. Like, yes, you could speak up, but is it actually called for in this moment? Like, what will it change? What good will it bring? And so, yeah, that's a good one. The desire to play the passive role, it's kind of like the opposite of the last couple, right? Inaction is a pretty large transgression, and it might be, in certain circumstances, as large a transgression or a step against your authenticity as excessive force would be toward an outcome that you desire. So if you do nothing, then maybe there's a time to, and there's also a time where it would be as harmful as excessive force, because if you're doing it for an outcome that you desire and you're playing a passive role in order to provoke a reaction from somebody, and that passive role is played not from the highest self, not from a place of integrity, then that is really a strike against your true self, and it's an action taken in ego. It's also sometimes we have to look outside of ourselves, and even if it is in alignment for us, we can't sit idly by as we watch the world burn, right? So we can't choose to be a martyr. We can't play the victim. So passive role is also victim mentality. we must express our values and stand as assets in what capacity we have achieved for any given moment. And there's a difference between that and like a public demonstration of fasting, for instance, like Gandhi did, or the monks in the revolutionary time of like the 60s that lit themselves on fire. First of all, that's not inaction. Like, fasting and killing yourself are both actions, right? And it's a public display of energy that is an expression of your truth, and not only your truth, but your message. So I feel like the passive role is very distinct, separate from that, right? Because if we sit by and do nothing in the face of an alternate force that we know we have the capacity to change, stop, or maybe help promote, and it's our job to do any of those things, and we stand by, then it really comes down to a childish degree of selfishness and a misunderstanding of egocentric mindset versus ecocentric mindset, where you're not part of an ecosystem anymore of humans, and therefore you are isolating yourself and you are no longer contributing to the norm but detracting from it. That is the same way that cancer works, right? When one cell looks out into the world and feels alienated instead of a part of. So I believe that that passive role is more of what it means. But once again, up to interpretation. This is what I'm getting out of it. And we'll talk more about that disassociation with our surroundings and community when we get into ego boundary further on down the line. We're going to talk a little bit more about that today. But that's the passive role. Moving into the desire to get rid of whatever disease one is affected by. This one's really interesting to me, as longtime listeners might be able to guess why. So what is getting rid of disease, or the desire to get rid of disease? Nowadays, and even back in the 60s and 70s when Bruce was in vogue, I'd say he never left being in vogue, but you know what I mean. Getting rid of disease, just as it is now, is, okay, tell me what to do. Like, tell me what procedure, tell me what surgery, tell me what drug to take to escape my reality, right? Because that's what drugging is. It's escape of reality, whereas medicine is confronting reality, learning lessons from it, changing your behavior, and moving on. So that's medicine. To drug is to escape reality. That includes, like, Tylenol to escape a headache. That includes thyroid medication to escape your thyroid problems. It includes blood thinners to escape your heart disease. It includes drugs for type 2 diabetes, all of these things to perpetuate your chosen false reality of living the same way, as opposed to reversing these conditions, which are all reversible, by the way. This is what it means to me when somebody says, I have the desire to get rid of my disease. Just give me the thing. Let me know what to do. Give me the thing to take and it'll go away and that's fine. But that's only symptoms, right? So you can have a desire to get rid of dis-ease, but the nature by which you desire to get rid of it is another thing. Because if you just desire it to be gone so that you can continue to persist in pattern and rigidity as who you were that caused the dis-ease to develop, then that is really not an ecocentric mindset, because you're affecting your family and your community and the people you work with and your loved ones and their families, all by not addressing what has come about in your life in the right way, which is a signal that you need to change. So elimination by integration would be the truth behind it. And Bruce talks about this himself in this concept. You need to be with the disease. You need to understand it, wanting to learn the lessons it has in store for you. And being rid of it for the sake of separating yourself from the experience is to rid yourself of the value of the experience itself. And that often leads to, as we all know from seeing our loved ones, our elderly, go through the same process I'm describing often leads to more pain in other ways and ultimately a long, slow death with tons of pharmaceuticals that's really expensive and just it's not fun to watch somebody suffer for a decade before they go. Yeah. So there's that, the desire to get rid of whatever disease, but not the desire to actually be fluid and understand why it came about and what you need to do differently after it manifests. So the overarching point, that's the six diseases. I believe that what he's really getting at here by explaining this in this way is that desire is a tool, and patterns of desire can be really crippling to our fluidity as fully conscious, aware, and creative human beings who are fully engaged in the process of life. So if you're not paying attention to the process, then you're not fully engaged because you're elsewhere. When you are desiring something, you are not present. And desire asks us to take a step back from the process. So if we're in constant desire, then we're actually never engaged in reality itself. And that's my main understanding of why he would express these concepts in the way that he did in this set of ideologies. Moving on to a very appropriate concept of broken rhythm. So this concept of broken rhythm is taking advantage of opportunity in order to change and not be stuck in pattern. His writings on this concept directly have a lot to do with martial arts, but they're also really, really critical for a lifestyle that nowadays has us really all fighting pattern 100% of the time. We are inundated by so much information, so many inputs, so many asks, so many requests, and so much processing of information that to break rhythm nowadays is really something that needs very intentionally practiced. And what broken rhythm meant to Bruce is a disruption that creates opportunities to strike, imposing a pattern break on the situation at hand. So that was paraphrasing a little bit, but it's really interesting to think about it as breaking rhythm, because rhythm is where we want to be. We talk about that all the time on the show, and Bruce talks about being in rhythm, being in flow, fluidity all the time as well. But what is a constant rhythm? It's a pattern. And so Bruce says, quoting, "Mere repetition of rhythmic calculated movements robs you of your aliveness." And so you can't copy somebody else's rhythm or even your own rhythm that's pre-established, because what you're doing then is robbing yourself of the opportunity to be in rhythm, to be in flow. You actually are adapting to pattern by learning someone else's rhythm and dancing to it. So disrupting the rhythm allows newness and risk and chance and change. That's new rhythm. And these pattern interrupts need to happen all the time if you're trying to actually authentically express yourself in the world. So this is how cycles of action and behavior and reaction are overcome in a journey of self-actualization. Once we do the same thing for long enough that its value is no longer growing, or that we have taken the value for as much as it's worth, it is time to allow for the release of its hold on us. Bruce talks about information in the same way as well, like knowledge is meant to be integrated and expressed and let go of, not to hoard knowledge the same way that a lot of people hoard books. I love books. I'm a collector of books. I will often look through my library and be like, what can I let go of now that I'm never going to look at again, or that is not serving me because I have it, that I'm not going to reference anymore. That doesn't happen as much nowadays, because a couple years ago I had to throw out my entire almost 30-year library of books because we were living in a moldy home. And since then, it's just kind of been rebuilding. And I still have a list of references that I love that I want to rebuy. But usually, I promise you, you go to your bookshelf at home, there's going to be things there that you either have never opened or that you have thoroughly integrated that you don't necessarily need anymore, or that you went through it, there were a couple of good lessons in there, but you'll likely never need it again. The ones that are thoroughly of value, the dog ears, the paper tags, the annotations in the margins and whatnot, and like more recently, I like to actually keep a separate notebook, a little tiny like 3x5 notebook, and take notes on books that are really impactful to me in there and keep it with the book, which is what Paul Check does. It's those ones that you want to hold on to, and then really, I'd say probably 60 to 80% of any book collection can be let go of and minimized. And I think that is a perfect analogy for the fact that we can't just accumulate rhythm upon rhythm upon rhythm, because then it's just a jumble of patterns on top of one another. And once that arrives, you know, codependency isn't just about people. It's not about people-people relationships. It can be the same thing with habits and projects and wisdom and knowledge and information. Anything that shapes your identity or that we have come to mistakenly identify with, you can have codependent relationships with that as well. And so breaking rhythm can be getting rid of some stuff, or it can be changing the way you do your work. You know, if you're actually unhappy at work, then I'm sure there's a way you can be doing the work differently, or you can be focusing differently with your mind in order to actually come into a different space by asking, oh, what am I doing it for? Who am I doing it for? How long am I going to be doing it for? Okay, I'm not happy here. What else can I be doing in order to build a new reality for myself? So these breaks and patterns are crucial for really actually achieving the aliveness that you want by sidestepping the calculated movements and automated decisions in your life. So the way to break rhythm then would be that we need to observe it first. And to observe it, there's obviously a certain degree of self-awareness here that some people have and just some people aren't ready for. So that's fair. But Bruce says on the concept of observation of our rhythms that you can, and I quote, free yourself by observing closely what you normally practice. Do not condemn or approve, merely observe. So you have to ask yourself, where are you foggy? Like, where has your awareness lapsed? Where does the autopilot need to change in your life? And then once you identify the autopilot, which I'm sure even in the self-improvement space, if you're into health, if you're into wellness, you're here, you're part of my listenership, I promise you we all still have autopilot like way too much of the time. We really need to ask ourselves once we identify that, and there's only so much that we can do. Like, just take on one or two pieces. Like, do you remember getting ready for work in the morning? Do you remember driving to or from or to your next run or to the next time you go to the gym? Do you remember how you held yourself and what you did and how you gained value out of the last time you were at the supermarket? So there's a good one, like bonus points for listening to podcasts while you're food shopping, because otherwise it's rather a mundane and mindless activity where you're subject to the energies and thoughts and feels of lots of other people. And so if you are one of these people trying to really level up in the world, it's good to take advantage of the opportunity to A, listen to some sort of music in order to create your own field of boundaries beyond what you would be able to otherwise, or B, kind of take some time to take in some wisdom while you're there, you know. So once we find these autopilot points, ask yourself what would happen also if you did the opposite. Like if you did the complete opposite. What's the opposite of a 9-to-5 job? I don't really know. Maybe you would have to do it out, like instead of sitting inside under nasty, toxic fluorescent lighting and stale air in an office building for lunch, what would happen if you ate your lunch in 5 minutes, which is very possible anyway, and then go for a 55-minute walk outside? That would be kind of be the opposite. The opposite of watching 3 hours of television every evening would be maybe sitting and reading a book with your loved one, maybe having 3 hours of sex. I don't know. maybe going for an extra walk in the evening. It's just an interesting concept. It's really breaking rhythm can be applied to literally everything we do. Like, oh, you take too many baths, take a shower. If you take showers all the time, take a bath. If you're never been in a natural body of water, go jump in a lake with some soap in your armpits. You know, it's really kind of endless. If you usually shy away from calling your friends and your family over the weekend, then maybe you make 10 phone calls this weekend and see how your life changes. Or maybe if you always work from home, go out and work in public. My life personally, the pattern breaks, it's where the most opportunity definitely comes from. And then look at other people's patterns for examples. Really, really crucial here. Like, where could their rhythms help you get out of yours? Because maybe it's a little bit harder for us to reconcile with the fact that we are in pattern more than we would like to be. But then when you look at other people and bring awareness to that, like, oh shit, I do that too. And you're able to catch yourself more often. So I'll leave it at another quote from Bruce. If you meet a situation with a chosen pattern, then your reaction and your response will always be lacking pliability and aliveness. So it comes back to full presence and always being willing to create newness in response to all stimulus. And that is broken rhythm. Moving on to conquering yourself, which is a really fascinating, and once again, I am touching the surface here, just brushing on it. This stuff is, it goes deep. So if you are enjoying this, definitely check out their version. I'm cramming in a lot into this compact review of some of my favorite things from his writings and from Shannon's sharings of the Bruce Lee Family Archives. This one's really, really heavy. So this is two sets of, I guess, short essays, if you will, where Bruce discusses the fetters, F-E-T-E-E-R-S, and the keys. So in learning how to conquer yourself and in conquering yourself, achieve truth and authenticity as a complete human being, as someone real, someone in true mastery, which we're going to touch on very lightly at the end of the episode. This is two sets of concepts that keep us from ourselves, and then the keys that unlock connection to ourselves. So the fetters and the keys. The fetters are ignorance, laziness, preoccupation with self, and fear, while the keys are self-knowledge, optimism, self-awareness, learning, remaining neutral, and taking action. And as Bruce says, a man is born to achieve great things if he can conquer himself. And true mastery stems from mastery of oneself. So the fetters are what binds us to our suffering as less or other than what we are. So they keep us from clear expressions as ourselves in a place of authenticity, as I've said, and each one of them holds us back and builds upon the other in a different way. So starting with ignorance, to understand your fear is the beginning of really seeing, as Bruce says. And most of us go entire lifetimes gripping onto ignorance as if holding on to like the seatbelt of a car that's like about to crash. Granted, if you are going through life holding onto your seat like something bad is about to happen, many crashes do come, like bad things do happen. But if you're always bracing and turning away, covering your ears, not wanting to understand the cause of our ignorance, and ignorance is simply not knowing, just like learning, according to Bruce, is learning the source of our ignorance, like overcoming our ignorance, because ignorance is not knowing, right? So without looking at yourself and learning who you are in earnest, you can't actually know other people. And communication and relations are compromised from the get-go in your entire life. And if you're self-ignorant, then you are incapable of actually forming healthy relationships, which are the key to being able to take action out in the world as your true self. So ignorance is not only turning a blind eye, it is a stranglehold on your trauma-dominant and conditioned ego that you have built as an armor or a shell. And we'll get a little bit into more of that verbiage as we move on as well. Ignorance is really the thing that protects us if we use it in the wrong way. Like, it's okay to be ignorant to things, but then the learning process allows us to unravel that. If you're ignorant in a way where it's keeping you from truth, then obviously it's pretty straightforward that it can be, once again, crippling to your own process and really makes it almost impossible to have real intimate relationships with yourself or other people. In regards to fear and preoccupation with self, Bruce says that sensitivity, initiative, creativity are all impossible with fear. So this is a really great one, actually, also. He says that fear compels us to cling to traditions and gurus. So once again, someone else at some point in the past has attained flow, fluidity, and you emulate theirs and cling to theirs, which means that you are in pattern, ironically. So it comes by comparison. Fear is all rooted in comparison of what some hypothetical other or hypothetical master, because if you are worrying about what people think of you and comparing yourselves to other people, then that person is your master in that moment. And it's always, always hypothetical of what other people will think of you. It's always just buts and what ifs and future and past. It is looking out into the world for answers. And Bruce says, again, that freedom discovers man the moment he loses concern over what impression he is making or about to make. So the focus is on the result and not what actually needs done. So if you're focused on what happens as a result of your action, then you're in fear and your initiative is nil. Your sensitivity is turned off. Your creativity is impossible because you are rigid. And the cure to that is actually doing what needs done, worrying about the result as it comes into presence and addressing it then, obviously. Now, laziness is a really, really interesting one, and I spend a little bit more time here. Laziness is the outcome of not facing fear or of fear getting the best of you. So I can't mention fear without mentioning Tim Ferriss's fear setting exercise, where you actually decipher what you're actually afraid of. You write down what you want to do if you had no fear, and then you write down, this is the simplest of terms, it's a little bit more involved in this, but you write down the worst case scenarios. Like, you try to imagine in the absolute doomsday scenario of your actions what would actually occur, and then you get a reality check of, oh, like, this is what I was afraid of. This is, like, basically almost nothing would happen, and I would just be able to try again most of the time. So, yeah, this outcome of not facing fear, self-knowing, ignorance, laziness is the outcome. It's malaise. It's just basically being a bump on the log. It's needing to reclaim your energy is needing to reclaim yourself. So if you're lazy, you really have lost yourself somewhere. You are disconnected from what and who you are. And to do so, to reclaim that sense of, I want to say purpose, because when you are in self, you have purpose that you can feel very easily. To do this, you need to use ego as a tool, not as a possession. And Bruce speaks on that a lot. He says that inwardly, psychologically, be a nobody, meaning that we need our identity to interact with other people in the 3D world, and we need our identity to form our role in the world, and we need a beginning role to play off of in order to evolve towards our destined role. But you need to know inwardly that you are not that, that you are not that title, that you are not what other people see you as. You are not even the person that's their perspective, because their perspective is partial and you are whole. So you are the driver of the car here and not the car itself. And we're talking about really the cure for laziness here, rewinding a little bit and flipping the script, because it's really important. If you are lazy, once again, you need to reclaim yourself because you've really forgotten what you are and what you're for. You need to be the driver, because if you were the car, you would be rigid. And that leads to what Bruce says is a fixed mental position. And that leads to sloth. It leads to just not caring about what happens or where you wake up every day. Because if we do not believe change is for us, then we have no reason to effort. So if you're the driver of the car, then you're able to change, because what happens when the car breaks down or when the car gets into an accident? You can just get the car fixed, or you can get a new car. And then you are unchanged, other than the change that you bring into yourself voluntarily by growing as the human that you are, by self-knowing, by loving yourself, by trying to improve your relationships. As the driver, we can believe that change is good, and we do have a reason to effort, because you don't want a Ford Escort, you want a Maserati. And that's not to speak materially, it's a metaphor. Obviously, we're talking about the ego reflection out in the world, the greater of a adult ego that you can build after you get rid of the expression of the adolescent ego, the more impact you can make in the world and the more people that you can help heal who are walking behind you and with you, of course. Now, Bruce speaks really extensively on this concept of the ego boundary, where the character becomes armor if the boundary is fixed. So once again, you're identifying with the car and not the driver. And he says the two phenomena of the ego boundary are identification and alienation. Inside the ego boundary, there is generally cohesion, love, cooperation. Outside the ego boundary, there is suspicion, strangeness, and unfamiliarity. So, if the ego boundary is limitless, love is able to extend outwardly in any direction we see fit, and so too if the boundary has limits, where we perceive love belongs, or limits our perception of where love exists, then we keep ourselves from going there. So, we can be dissatisfied with our own lives and yet do nothing about it, other than turn to laziness and sloth and numbing, because the grass doesn't look greener on the other side. It's the opposite. In this place of ego rigidity, despite our discomfort, the only green grass that we can see is the tuft that we're standing on. It's the tuft inside the car, an island of green in a sea of dangerous unknown. And we become the cancer in our own life, going back to that concept again of alienation. We no longer associate ourselves with the ecosystems and social circles that we're surrounded by. And connection is the antidote. So stretching that boundary out to the thing in question, and in doing so, extending our love to it, is a way out of laziness. It's a way out of separation. All of this laziness comes back to ego rigidity. It's about being in a really, really bad place of ego rigidity, where not only are you rigid on your ego of who you think you are, but you are afraid, you don't know yourself, and you are ignorant. And so you become fixed in this armor of what would otherwise be your greatest asset, which is your identity. And so Bruce says the ego boundary needs to be limitless in its expression. And that's not to say that we can't have boundaries and control what we allow in and what we allow out, but it needs to, one, be true and free and clear. So it needs to be an actual expression of yourself. And then two, you need to be willing to extend its love out to things that you are unfamiliar with. And so that comes in with learning over ignorance. And that brings us to the keys. Once again, self-knowledge, optimism, self-awareness, learning, remaining neutral, and taking action. And the keys to growth, to self-knowing, self-awareness, to being human, start with self-knowing, and that is knowing the self beneath the ego. So who you are inside of your identity. And for that, you need to know the good and the bad and understand the source of your own ignorance. But also, you need to know your passions and your pleasures and your ambitions, your reasons for acting and being what you are and who you are. Self-knowing includes knowing your tendencies and your behavioral patterns and knowing how you formed as a human being and what parts are not serving you and what parts of you are in order to really be able to integrate the lessons from the parts that are harmful and let them go, and more fully and clearly express the parts that are actually you. And most people go their whole lives without ever touching on that. So that goes back once again to ignorance. And then optimism is really trust. Optimism is faith. That's as simple as that. It's trust in your own process. It's allowance for success to come into your life by way of faith that what you are trying to achieve as yourself is going to work out as long as you show up. Learning is something that we've been talking about really this whole time, because there's that dichotomy of ignorance and learning. Ignorance is not knowing, simple as that. It's more of a negative word in general nowadays, and people use it in a derogatory sense, but ignorance is really willful ignorance, and ignorance are two different things. And ignorance is simply the act of not knowing. Learning is the discovery of your ignorance. So it's the discovery of your means, your attributes, your perspective through which you are able to love, and really the uncovering of areas of your mind where love is lacking. What does it mean where love is lacking? Well, if there are patterns of behaviors in your mind that you're not aware of because you go on autopilot, then you have not been able to bring love to those places because you don't even know that they exist. So that goes back to self-knowing. And then really, aside from that, the learning aspect really means that we need to be striving in order to be our full selves, to always expand our, not knowledge, but wisdom. And in order to do that, we have to remain open and optimistic. And really, the next one is remaining neutral. We have to remain neutral for that. So earlier on in this year's season of Forge Your Health podcast, I took a big deep dive into non-reactive neutrality as a healer, but also just in general, as we are all healers of our own lives, just how to approach conversations and situations from a place of non-reactive neutrality. So I'm not going to dive really big into it here. I suggest that you do go back and listen to that if you haven't already. It's a really good one. Bruce says that if you want the truth to stand clear before you, never be for or against. The struggle between for and against is the mind's worst disease. And he says, be a calm beholder of what is happening around you. So it's really just knowing that the best way to approach any stimulus, any situation, any conversation, is to not judge and hold within your boundaries any sort of expression of reaction until the time is appropriate. And before then, know that there can't be judgment before the outcome. And to really hold space for somebody is definitely a developed skill. I've met what are supposed to be very high level healers and coaches and guides and all sorts of people who are good at this, and all sorts of them that it's like they've never heard of the term holding space before, even though it's kind of a buzzword now. This is about holding space for whatever someone is expressing to come through, and then reflect back to them from a place of space holding that is neutral and constructive and helpful and inspiring. Once again, going back to communication. So last two, taking action and self-awareness. So Bruce talks about a healthy person as someone having good orientation and an ability to act. Good orientation requires self-knowing and neutral observation. And then an ability to act is obviously not being lazy, not doing nothing. A lot of these concepts from these different writings kind of melt together a little bit, and it's for a reason. It's holistic thinking, right? So ask yourself how you would like to act. Decide on the reason behind your actions, like choosing to act for the sake of healing, and then open yourself up to everything that comes. And what I mean by that is before you take any action, maybe try this in the next day or two before you forget, decide why you're acting, even if it's just speaking to somebody, and then express what it is you want to express and see what happens. Because that good orientation part of a healthy person is really, really powerful when we take advantage of it. So that is the fetters and the keys of conquering yourself. This was a pretty huge project to try to distill it down so much. Just to dig into this much of his writings and ideas at once and try to distill the actual meaning, at least as I perceived it in the moment, was quite an undertaking. This was a big project that took a lot of deep creative thought in of itself, even though the concepts that I'm sharing aren't actually coming directly from me as a root of origin. And so it was actually kind of profound getting to go back through these and bringing them to you in a repackaged way. And I hope that it was really, really helpful. I do have a few concepts here where I just want to read some quotes from Bruce. And, well, I'll put it plainly and blatantly, I was worried writing out these notes that this was going to go way over 2 hours if I tried to do deep dives on every single one of them. So instead of that, I chose what I believe would come together as a full system of concepts for you to be intrigued by and want to learn more about and take the deeper dive and go maybe pick up one of Bruce's books or go on brucelee.com and read more of the blogs from the podcast shows or to go listen to them yourself. They are kind of timeless episodes. Just because it's like 2016, 17, 18 doesn't mean that you won't get a great deal of value out of them. And once again, because it's going to be the last time that I'm able to mention it, since we're not going to be talking about Bruce like every single week from now on, unfortunately, if you haven't yet seen the man's expression come through on film, I highly, highly suggest that you watch one of his movies. If you're not too much into old movies, then I would start with Enter the Dragon, which is the most highly produced one. It's the one that was made in partnership with WB Studios here in the United States, I believe. And so it's a little bit of higher quality. And just watch how he exudes his principles through his every glance. And I'll just leave it at that. I highly suggest that you do. So having said all of that I was kind of worried about being long in the tooth and going a little over time here, I do want to share some more concepts, three in particular, through his words alone. And that would be his thoughts on the complete human, his thoughts on true mastery, and a really fantastic quote from one of the interviews he did on TV way back in the day on Someone Real. On the complete human, he says, as a person matures, he will realize that his skills are not so much tools used to conquer others, but tools used to explode his ego and all of its follies. All the practice is to round him up to be a complete man. Separate quote. In short, the idea is to enter a mold yet not be caged in it, or to obey the principles without being bound by them. This is important for a pliable, choiceless observation without exclusion is the foundation of a complete human being. On true mastery transcends any particular art. It stems from mastery of oneself. The ability developed through self-discipline to be calm, fully aware, and completely in tune with oneself and the surroundings in the midst of the ever-changing moment. Separate quote. The true gung fu master aims his blows at himself, and when successful, he may even succeed in knocking himself out. The primary function of one's tools is really revealed when they are self-directed and used to destroy greed, fear, anger, and folly. Manipulative skill is not the goal. After years of training, one hopes to achieve a vital loosening and equability of all powers. On true mastery. I love that. The ultimate knowing, right? The ultimate knowing. And I will leave you with this. In response to Bruce being asked how he would want to be remembered, he said, somehow one day you will hear, hey, now that is quality. That is someone real. I would like that. And that was Bruce Lee. And I think that he achieved that. And until next episode, where we jump back into a couple of incredible back-to-back interviews over the next few shows here, I hope that you are loved, that you remember that you are loved, know that you are never alone. Know that if you need a reminder of that, and if you need support in your own journey, that I'm here. Do not hesitate to reach out. And until next time, please strive, if you will, to honestly express yourself as much as you can in any given moment. May you be grounded and may you be connected at all times. Hare Krishna.